phone. Don't need no speedy car to get me home. Don't need no nothing, all I need is time for the simple life. Ooh. Go get your butt off of that lazy couch. Put down a laptop and get out of that house. Don't need no nothing, all I need is time for the simple life.
Welcome to Simple Life Radio, stories for the adventurous at heart. I'm your host, Cynthia Fernandez, and this hour is dedicated to a human connection, life experiences and perceptions from the folks on the Central Coast of California. You know, for many of us involved in graduation of some kind or another this time of year, we have relatives, perhaps our son or daughter, parent or friend is graduating. And our attention turns to the contemplations and new beginnings, things accomplished, things about to have begun. And for those graduating, it's a time of goals and aspirations to finally begin, quote, our future. There are many celebrations, but also uncertainty. And so today's show, we'll be looking at methods of learning and how we might incorporate alternative ways of learning that will not only facilitate the practical academic knowledge, but also life skills, confidence, and compassion for life. And I'd like to start by playing a clip for you on Searching for the Right Passage from Childhood and School by Maurice Gibbons.
Traditional schooling is fixed as firmly in our minds as the sunrise was in the minds of 15th century Europeans. We all know what school is: classrooms, teachers, lessons, textbooks, assignments, tests, and report cards. But there is another way to educate children, a way as different from traditional schooling as Earth Turn is from sunrise. In this approach, everything seems reversed. Because it is so distinctive, we call it the alternative. The questions at the core of the traditional model are, what does everyone need to know? And how can we teach that content to everyone efficiently? The alternative, however, asks, who is this person? And how can each of them be empowered to manage their own learning and their lives? I was taught by the traditional model, and when I became a teacher, I taught my students by the traditional model, too. But from the beginning, something was missing, especially for adolescents in my high school classes who needed so much that studies and books could not provide. I began experimenting with other approaches. Introducing drama seemed to give students opportunities to explore their identities. We planned scholars' retreats with students at which they discussed issues that concerned them: violence, the environment, sex, the future, and personal values. We organized Stop the City, I Want to Get On, a week of learning experiences for 350 adolescents from every high school in an urban school district. We used the deserted double gymnasium. Student families each built their own environments. They chose from a menu of experiences offered by local experts. They used the city as a classroom. They created their own experiences, activities, and ceremonies. It was as powerful for us as for them. Gradually, the shadowy outline of a model of the alternative to traditional schooling took shape. In it, students became the central focus. They directed their own learning and wrestled with both the freedom and responsibility involved. They reached out beyond the school to the community, to places across the country or the globe. They took on challenging experiences, sometimes in cooperative teams, sometimes on their own. Often, they were overwhelmed and needed help. It became clear that the overall purpose was not courses, grades, and credits, but the degree to which students developed as people, how much they matured, and were on track for a promising adulthood.
And we've just been listening to Walkabout, Self-Directed Learning by Maurice Gibbons. And so I want to welcome our guest today, Joseph Braun from Carmel. He has a 35-year career as a teacher and a teacher educator, and he continues to teach courses as an adjunct professor through the University of Missouri, Columbia. He's also Professor Emeritus at Illinois State. Welcome, Joseph. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Cynthia.
So, Joseph, I want to start off with how you first encountered this alternative method and how did it impact you personally?
Okay, well, in 1984, I went to work, 1983, I went to work at the University of Wyoming. And I was assigned to what was called the Cheyenne Field Office. That's not an office out in the field, but it's was off campus. And I directed a elementary and secondary student teaching program there. The director of that office was a fellow named Max Brown, a very inspirational and wonderful mentor. And he introduced me to a curriculum model called the Walkabout, or Challenge Education. And this model was based on a film that was made in 1971 in Australia, and the director's name was Nicholas Roeg. And this is available online free. You can actually watch this movie in 1971, and it's the story of an Australian ad executive, kind of a madman, literally. Mm. He organizes a picnic for his two children, his 14-year-old daughter and her 7-year-old brother, takes them out into the wilderness, and begins shooting at him. The brother doesn't see it, but the girl does, and they hide, and eventually the father commits suicide.
Oh, my.
And the kids are there by themselves.
Out in the middle of the
outback. Out in the middle of nowhere with no water, no way of getting along. And all of a sudden, along comes a young Aboriginal who's on his walkabout. And a walkabout was a rite of passage that Aboriginals practice. And what they would do is kick the teenager out into the wilderness, and they had to go out and survive for 6 months. Then they could come back and be a full-fledged adult of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so the film is about the interaction of this young Australian on his walkabout and these two urban children, very middle class children, and how they interact and get along and communicate. And I'm not going to tell you how it ends because it would ruin the ending. But it was a cult film, a spectacular scenery, not an easy movie to watch at times, but really a wonderful inspirational film. So Maurice Gibbons sees this and he goes, how can I apply this to education? And that's where he develops the Challenge Education Walkabout model.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, he identifies six tasks. The first task is logical inquiry. You have to use a process of disciplined inquiry, and you have to apply it to cognitive development. You have to learn something that is of significance, something of knowledge that's substantive. And so those are two tasks. A third task is volunteer service. You have to do something to make the world a little bit better place. A fourth task is to learn a practical skill, something that you can use in your life that will help you get along better. Another task is an adventure. You have to use risk-taking in an unfamiliar environment. And then finally, creativity. Do something to express yourself artistically.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the six tasks, and what Maurice Gibbons suggested would be that high school students in their senior year design a walkabout experience for themselves.
Uh-huh.
And then find a group of mentors that would help coach them and signify at the end they had successfully completed their walkabout. So when Max Brown introduced this idea to me, we decided that we could use it with student teachers, and then they could use it with their high school students.
Ah.
So we instituted it in our student teaching program, and that's how it sort of began, and I've been using it ever since.
Well, I do remember that movie, and it is one of those that stay with you.
Yes.
Yeah. And the example of the walkabout in the movie from an Aboriginal perspective, I guess other Indigenous cultures have their own versions of rites of passage that all include challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Most, if not all, include basically a life-death scenario that the individual needs to deal with.
Right.
Right. Yeah, so that's really interesting that it's been adapted to education. So what are some of the concerns that we might consider with our current educational model where this is not a part of the curriculum or support?
Well, currently there's a trend called Common Core, which is a set of standards. And they're focused basically on math and literacy. So things like science and social studies aren't deliberately or explicitly included in this Common Core of standards. The examinations that have been built or the tests have been built around asking students to apply more complicated ways of thinking. But what's missing is some of this more personal directed stuff. And I think what it requires is that a school district make a commitment to allowing this in as part of the curriculum, as part of their educational experience for kids. It shouldn't replace Common Core.
No, exactly.
But there should be room for this kind of a learning and experience for students.
You know, Joseph, it makes me think about our young people today and how basically reducing their formal education to Common Core kind of sets them up to be laborers, sets them up to perhaps learn a vocation, but certainly doesn't give them any kind of richness or depth individually to contribute.
Right. There's the spiritual dimension that's kind of missing from the Common Core, the idea of making the world a better place.
Yeah, or having some sense of yourself in full potential.
Yes. Yeah, that certainly is not part of the Common Core. The Common Core is much more academic than that.
Absolutely. Now, Joseph says, and I quote, "It is critical that we promote for the next generation a global sense of taking care of one another and using technology to promote peace." So if we enter a room, Joseph, anywhere in the school where there are similar presentations that would be underway, students displaying all kinds of alternatives that they've selected to meet for the five-year basic or the five basic challenges, tell us what you mean by that quote of having it be really critical that we promote for the next generation a global sense of taking care of one another and promoting peace.
Well, obviously, we have at our disposal weapons of mass destruction. I mean, they are out there, and that could really threaten the future of the world. And in many ways. So one of the things that I would hope is that in classrooms we're teaching students how to think about ways to solve problems, to manage conflict, to work cooperatively in addressing issues of common concern, and to communicate with one another and to learn how to be empathic. Those are all the kinds of skills and experiences that I think students beginning in their early elementary kindergarten years, they have the capacity to develop these. And as part of the curriculum, they should have opportunities to do that.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. You know, the fact is that we're told the numbers of sociopathic and psychopathic individuals on the planet is growing at an alarming rate. And you just mentioned empath as one of the aspects of development using this walkabout approach with individual development. And maybe those two things are related. We're not really engaging our young people in developing their sense of empathy for others, and we do interface so much with machines, and we kind of regulate and measure ourselves to machines, that it could be directly related to the breakdown in our, say, societal development, really.
Because the spiritual, the emotional kinds of awareness and well-being are kind of dismissed. They're not considered important. That shouldn't be part of how we go about learning in schools. And I think that's a serious shortcoming. I think there should be room for that. And programs like the Walkabout kind of provide an opening for that to happen.
And if any individual is listening to this now podcast and want to know more about either you or getting in touch with a professional teacher who utilizes this program, how would you suggest they go about doing that?
Well, there's several ways. You could contact me directly by emailing me at J.A. Braun, B-R-A-U-N, as in Nancy, at I, L as in Larry, S as in Steve, T as in Tom, U.edu. That's my email address. Or if you wanted to go online, you could look at websites. One would be selfdirectedlearning.com. I highly recommend that. That's focuses on similar kinds of things that we've just been talking about, such as the Walkabout program. And then another is called walkabout.org, and that's a website that focuses on the Walkabout program itself. So those would be, you know, either contact me personally or go online and seek out that information at those links.
Our guest today, Joseph Braun from Carmel, has a 35-year career as a teacher and teacher educator, and he continues to teach courses as an adjunct professor through the University of Missouri-Columbia, also professor emeritus at Illinois State. And we are talking about alternative ways of learning that develop massive amounts of the individual rather than focusing on just core competencies. So, Joseph, I wanted to ask you, how would you describe this in terms of your own experiences and how individual students have had experience for themselves? How would you describe these experiences that they have had using the Walkabout method?
Sure. Maybe the best way to answer that would be to just read a little section of an article that I wrote about our use of Walkabout. It actually came about from an article that Maurice Gibbons wrote in Phi Delta Kappan, a very well-regarded journal of professional education. And he wrote the article in 1974. Max Brown introduced this idea to me in Wyoming in 1983, and then we used it for a while. In 1984, Phi Delta Kappan was writing a 10-year follow-up because this original article by Maurice Gibbons had been so popular. It had been the most requested reprint of any article in the journal's history. And so they were doing a 10-year follow-up, and I was lucky enough to get to know the editor, and he asked me to write a short piece, and I did. So in it, I do describe the experiences of some of the students, and as people listen, you can pick out the volunteer, the creativity, the adventure, the cognitive development. And so, among the tasks that student teachers have undertaken to meet the criteria for challenge education, think Walkabout, have been cross-country skiing, scuba diving, and deer hunting. Students have studied the Middle East, solar energy and dental hygiene. They have conducted interviews and surveys, done library research, and studied historic photographs. They have learned statistics, learned to assemble, clean, and operate a rug shampooer, learned to bake a cake, and learned to change a tire. They have volunteered to teach cooking to a 4-H class, to counsel in a career center for abused women, and to care for children through Parents Anonymous. It's worth noting parenthetically that many students choose to complete tasks usually associated with members of the opposite sex. Males learn to bake a cake, females to change a tire. So in this way, Walkabout allows student teachers to learn skills they might not otherwise have mastered, and it helps to break down sex role stereotypes. So that was a benefit we didn't anticipate, but was an outcome that surprised us and pleased us very much.
Well, yeah, and it totally qualifies for challenge education.
Sure,
exactly. Thinking outside the box and trying on the other side of things. Well, I really appreciate getting those details. So on a personal level with these students, did they express any personal gratitude or amazement of their own that they didn't expect to have happen?
Yeah. Yeah, I can think of one that just really stands out in my mind. And it was a student who was a victim of sexual abuse as a college student. And so for her challenge education, she read up on sexual abuse and rape and why it happens and what happens to the victim. She volunteered in a rape crisis center. Her creativity was to write a poem to her rapist.
Oh, my.
So she just embarked on a lot of different things, all focusing on this very horrific experience in her life. And she just reported it was like this huge release for her. She really kind of was able to let go a lot of the baggage that she was hanging on to as a result of this experience.
And no doubt she was able to help many people along the way from a standpoint of real compassion and real understanding.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Boy, we sure need more of that in our society, Joseph. I'm so glad you're sharing this with our audience. And I understand, not to change the subject too quickly, that you're also a musician. Did you actually start music as part of your challenge education?
No. No, I was playing music long before I encountered the Walkabout Challenge Education model. But when I think about it, as a musician, there are things that I do that kind of fit into it. For example, I've been learning different musical theories. So what's the difference between a C7 and a C major 7? So I've been reading and taking lessons. So that would be cognitive development, logical inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
For volunteering, I teach in a program called Guitars Not Guns.
I love the sound of that.
It's a wonderful program. It's a national program with local chapters, and each local chapter raises money, and then they use that money to buy guitars for beginners, adolescents or children age past 8 and up. And they find volunteers, such as myself, who will go in and teach an hour or two a week. And after 8 weeks, the students, if they've stayed with it and practiced, they get to keep the guitar that they were using.
Wow.
So that's my volunteers, Guitars Not Guns. Anyone interested in finding out more about that, there is a website, Guitars Not Guns, and then there's a Monterey chapter that you can specifically look at. And then for creativity, anytime you arrange a song, there's creative effort in how am I going to play this? You know, how will I arrange this so it sounds how I want it to sound? An adventure in music is going on stage. Anytime you go on stage, you're dealing with an unpredictable environment.
That's for sure.
So as a musician, I can see how these elements kind of fit together in what I do with that aspect of my life.
Well, that's just wonderful. And the fact that you are a teacher educator really inspires me, because you have this background, this wealth of understanding and knowledge and experience that can incite and motivate teachers now on those front lines to carry that forward.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I'm teaching online for the University of Missouri, and I've incorporated challenge education as a model for the curriculum. It's a graduate level course, a master's course, and it's a seminar in civic education. So the course is designed to help high school, middle school, elementary teachers teach future citizens the skills they need to keep the democracy working or working better. And so in the course, the assignments that the students have spin out of challenge education. So for cognitive development, they have to read some articles I've identified. For logical inquiry, I ask them to read a book of their own choosing and to do a kind of a report of their learning. For volunteer service, I ask them to design something for their class to do related to civic life as a volunteer project. As an adventure, I ask them to write a proposal to the school board, or to go to a school board meeting and make a proposal for putting more civic education back in the curriculum, because it's lost ground to things like Common Core.
Mm.
And for creativity, I ask them to teach to develop something using technology that will allow them to teach civic ed. So I try and avoid the mundane PowerPoint and ask them to do something else. And they're actually, they leap to that because they'll do iMovies. They do all kinds of cool stuff. So those are the kinds of ways that I take that model and incorporate it into a very specific course.
And do our teachers today have some specific challenge that they have to overcome in order to modify their interactions with their class to include these kinds of rich and experiences? I mean, is it an economic issue? We've all been hearing about economic issues really affecting our schools today.
Sure, and they do. In the way that schools are funded, the wealthier schools and the wealthier districts tend to have more money at their disposal.
Mm-hmm.
The inner city schools, that's where the real problems and the lack of success by our students is most obvious. It's in inner city schools and poverty situations. Those are the students that drag down scores, unfortunately. And so if we really want to address the problems of education in America, it's going to require putting money in those schools.
In those schools. Or would you say it would also be positively impacted if we had a network of volunteers for those schools?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That can make a big difference. Having adults get involved with kids in school is so important. One of the populations that we don't take enough advantage of are our senior citizens. That could be very helpful in working with elementary kids or even junior high kids, mentoring them in some way.
Mm-hmm.
If we could figure out ways to do that, maybe even using the internet as a process, mm-hmm. through Skype, that could be a way of connecting our students to people that could be a good resource for them.
That's an awesome idea. I think that would benefit both groups.
Yeah.
Significantly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I love that idea. Well, I volunteer at my granddaughter's school here locally, and they have a rich volunteer participation on the part of community members, not just parents.
Mm-hmm.
People who have had children go through the school and no longer do, but they continue to volunteer their time and energy.
Right.
And as a result, they are able to offer art on a volunteer basis completely, and some other small, outburst kind of curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and support that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is awesome. I love the Guitars Not Guns. it tells me a lot about you as an individual, and I'm really happy to know there's people like you out there walking among us.
Well, it's my pleasure to do it. I mean, I that's a way I get to teach still. And you know, there's a joy in helping people learn things, and a joy in seeing them accomplish. In fact, a few weeks ago, one of my students that I've had for well over a year at the Monterey County Boys and Girls Club in Seaside, she's a middle school student, and she told me that she was going to be doing a performance at her school's talent show. So I said, well, I gave her my business card, and I said, well, give me a call. And I didn't really expect her to, but she did, two nights before the performance. And it worked out that I was free. And I went to something that was just amazing. It was at Martin Luther King Middle School in Seaside in their cafeteria multipurpose room. It was packed, wall-to-wall people,
wow.
500 people.
Oh.
And my student and I met ahead of time so I could warm her up a little bit and you know, give her some encouragement, tell her to break her leg. And she went on and she played the old song, Wipeout.
Uh-huh.
And then her principal came and played with her a duet of Pipeline, the old surfing song. These are what we were teaching these kids. And it was great. She just performed in front of all these people and did a marvelous job. I was so happy for her.
What
and
a
just
great
proud
experience.
Yeah, it was
too.
Really cool. It was great. So, you know, when things like that happen, it makes Guitars Not Guns all worth it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we haven't covered, Joseph, that you'd like to share or just comment on for our listeners?
Yeah, I guess one thing that I think really interests me about what's happening in schools now is the intersection of technology and learning, because that in a way can create the vehicle or the space for students to engage in things like walkabout. It used to be that so much of what students learned in schools came from the textbook and what the teacher brought into the classroom in their head.
That's true.
That was the curriculum, the textbook and what the teacher knew. And now that's all of a sudden totally changed. There's this massive amount of information. And now the teacher's job is to help students hone in on what is critical to learn and what is useful and what they can use to have value beyond school, how they can make a difference in the world. So the teacher's job has really changed a lot from not dispensing curriculum as to kind of helping students control all this information.
So kind of be a tour guide.
In a sense, yeah.
Yeah, let them have their own experience and just show them around.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Well, it's been a delight to have you on the show. I'm so pleased that this information is available and now in podcast form can be downloaded or listened to online. I want to ask you, though, before we completely run out of time, what you envision for our future.
That's a good question. I guess I envision people living lives that kind of address those tasks in the walkabout model, that they engage in volunteer work, that they express themselves creatively, that they constantly learn practical skills as they go through life, skills they can use to help make life easier for themselves, that they keep their minds active by doing things that develop their cognition, that they take adventures.
Nice.
And take risks, go on trips.
I bet they'd be happier.
I think so. Better than living a life of quiet desperation.
Oh, right.
And watching TV.
Oh, yeah. I'll join you in that vision for the future. And since we are co-sponsored on this show by our local favorite bookstore, Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden, I wonder if you would share with us what your all-time favorite book is.
Can I share two?
Of course.
One's a children's book by Robert Munch, I think is his name, and it's called I'll Love You Forever. And it's a wonderful story that just makes people cry whenever they read it. It's a wonderful story about, well, I won't tell you about
it. Don't give it away.
And then the other one is an adult fiction book by an author named T. Corsegan Boyle, or T.C. Boyle. He's a professor down in Santa Barbara, I believe. And he wrote a book called Tortilla Curtain. It's a wonderful book. It's the story of a young fellow who's inherited a lot of money and he's driving his BMW. He's a do-gooder and he writes an environmental column for the local paper. Driving down a hillside in the hills of Los Angeles and hits an illegal alien and knocks him to the side of the road. This is all on the first page. And he goes over, and instead of actually helping him, because he doesn't want to get entangled with this guy, he just throws $20 at him, jumps in his car, and drives off. And the rest of the novel is how these two people's lives keep getting entangled. And it's a story of pathos and humor. I mean, you're laughing at one point, and you're going, oh, how could this happen to this poor guy? And it's it changes the protagonist into kind of he kind of loses his moral compass as the story goes along. So I highly recommend Tortilla Curtain by T.C. Boyle. I've used it in courses I've taught, and it's a great book.
Lovely. And so what are you reading now, Joseph?
I am reading a book called The Storied Life of A.J. Frickery, by the daughter of our neighbor, the Zavons. Her name is Gabriel Zavon. I got it from Pilgrim's Way, and ironically, it was autographed by her. Apparently, she autographed, her mother said, about 1,000 copies, and I got one of them.
Yay.
So I'm reading that. It's an interesting book. And then I'm reading a book on Robert Oppenheimer called American Prometheus.
Quite different subject matter.
Yeah, I usually have two or three different things going at the same time.
Yeah. Well, that's so interesting. I always appreciate this part of the show where I get to find out what people are reading and what they have read. And we actually do make purchased decisions based on recommendations, including our guests on the show. So thank you so much for spending time here on Simple Life Radio. We so appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Cynthia. I enjoyed it very much.
And we'll be back with you again next week on Simple Life Radio. I'm your host, Cynthia Fernandez. Tune in either through our Radio Monterey website at radiomonterey.com, or you'll find our podcast on our website, pilgrimsway.com, also listed on iTunes, and some of them are on YouTube. So I hope you check us out, and we'll be back again, as I said, next week. Thanks for listening.